From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The bottom line is this. Budget experts estimate that Illinois will have a $2.7 billion shortfall of revenues for this fiscal year and a $4.6 billion shortfall for next fiscal year. This is a public health crisis, but it is accompanied by massive economic disruption that's unprecedented in modern history.
Governor Pritzker signed a partnership with other Midwestern states for a coordinated reentry.
Each of us have taken ideas from one another. I think what we're trying to do with the, collaborative effort together is to make sure that we're using similar criteria. The industries are similar, the thinking is a little bit similar, and that makes it a very worthwhile collaborative to have because collectively I think we're making good decisions.
That's Governor J.B. Pritzker, could be laying the groundwork there for some moves toward reopening the economy, planning to consult with some other Midwest governors. And while he's dealing with the public health emergency, he's also got quite a budget mess on his hands. We'll discuss that and more coming up. I'm Sean Crawford, and this is State Week. Here in Springfield, our panel is practicing social distancing from his home. We have Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, and also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Joining us also from his home is the NPR Illinois reporter Sam Dunklaw. And our guest this week from Chicago, we have WBEZ's government and politics reporter Dave McKinney. And Dave, thanks for being with us once again.
Sean, great to see you.
Well, let me move on to Charlie first, because this is right up your alley, Charlie. We always like to talk about the state budget, and we have plenty to talk about here. Last week on this program, we discussed some projections that were put forth by the University of Illinois Institute for Government and Public Affairs. Well, this week, the governor came out with their projections from his budget office, and as you heard at the start of the show, they're estimating about a $2.7 billion reduction in revenue for the current fiscal year, and things get even worse from there going forward into 2021. Charlie, your takeaway on what the governor had to say this week?
Well, I think there was nothing very encouraging about it, and kind of ironically, the governor's Office of Management and Budget released this revision to its revenue estimates that were made at the time of the budget presentation by the governor roughly 2 months ago. They released them on April 15th, which normally would have been the day income taxes were due. But of course, as we know, the governor postponed that for 90 days. And so part of the calculations that the GOMBI did shows that income taxes are going to go down roughly a little bit more than $1.6 billion in the current fiscal year, which ends June 30th. Sales taxes are going to go down $737 million from the projections they made just 2 months ago. Lottery is going to be down. The casino gaming is going to be down. The only increase that they're counting on is in terms of federal dollars, because the feds have already provided some money to the state to help with the COVID costs. And the bottom line is that there is going to be a huge drop-off, as was mentioned earlier. And for next year, the projections are, I guess you could say, even worse. They revised their income tax projection down $2.5 billion from what the projection was 2 months ago. And that's even factoring in roughly $1 billion of money that should have been paid this year but won't come due until the first month, July, of the next fiscal year, fiscal 2021. They figure sales taxes are going to be down roughly $1.6 billion. Everything else is going to be down for a total of roughly $4.6 billion. And if you realize that these numbers are predicated on the assumption that we're going to that voters will ratify the constitutional amendment allowing for a graduated income tax, and the rates are already set in law should that occur. If we do not get the voter approval, then the deficit, the shortfall for fiscal 21, would be in the neighborhood of $7.5 billion. One of the things that was in the report, aside from the numbers, that I found was kind of disheartening. They're talking about no year-after-year growth until the final quarter of fiscal year 2021. Well, the final quarter for fiscal year 2021 is going to be late spring, early summer of next year. So they're assuming that things are going to be pretty bad for a while.
Sam, the governor's been talking for a long time about sort of pinning his hopes on getting this graduated income tax approved this fall, and feels as though that's the way to get the state on some better financial footing. Even more so now, he made a push this week when he discussed these budget numbers. He doesn't have a whole lot of other options.
No, unfortunately not. And of course, you know, the governor was elected on, you know, that particular precedent that he would come to Springfield and that he would work with lawmakers to get a graduated income tax measure on the ballot. November isn't too far away. The pinnacle of what efforts that Pritzker and his administration and his allies have been trying to do are about to come to, you know, a head. With a projected $7.4 billion hole in the budget, if the graduated income tax does not pass, now granted there would still be a hole one way or the other, it would be difficult to crawl out of that without it, so they reason. But, you know, Sean, expect the opponents of the tax to continue beating the drum that this is not a good idea for Illinoisans. It's hard to know whether or not there will be a protracted battle against the graduated income tax as the COVID-19 pandemic continues on. You know, it's hard to know whether or not it's going to go into the summer or even into the fall as we get closer to the election. But one way or the other, yeah, you're right. The state appears to, at least from the initial projections, to not have much of an option.
Dave, we've been watching this, you know, as a public health emergency for the last several weeks, but it does feel, at least the story seems to be shifting a little bit as well into now what it's doing to the economy and whether or not the economy can rebound. As Charlie mentioned, some projections are showing that we may not see any type of growth until basically a year from now. Does it feel that way to you, as though the story has shifted a little bit here?
Well, it is, and I mean, I think that was inevitable. I mean, when you contemplate that we, in the span of 1 month, have had hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of people filing for unemployment insurance, that gives you an idea right there of what the immediate hit is on the state income taxes. And then if you drive around the various towns in the state, you know, in Springfield, White Oaks Mall, or here in Chicago, Watertower Place, or out in Schaumburg in the suburbs, Woodfield Mall, all of these places have been dark now for the better part, you know, beyond a month. And those places are like cash registers for the state and for the local municipalities that rely on the sales taxes. Having those all be dark, of course it's going to have an effect, and it's going to be profound. And it's just very difficult to kind of contemplate how deep we go, where the floor of all of this is, and whether we've come close to hitting it or not.
Sam, speaking of unemployment, you covered this week some of the latest numbers, and does it seem as though, I'm sure some of this, so there has been a lag, I guess you would say, of people who have tried to file earlier and were having issues, you know, being able to do so with the state system. Does it seem as though we have hit that floor for unemployment yet, or do we know?
I don't think we know yet, Sean. I mean, Dave touched on it just before you turned it over to me. Hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of people have filed for unemployment. Spoke with the Department of Employment Security, the state agency that runs processes unemployment claims. And just in the past week, 141,000 new claims were filed. I mean, again, this is just in the past week. That department says that they processed something like 650,000 unemployment claims in 6 weeks, which is more than they do in a year. In fact, looking at their table, it's a 1,700% increase year over year in terms of the number of people who have filed for unemployment. As Dave mentioned, that's a hit to the sales taxes. But I think one bright spot in all of this is that the federal government is going to be kicking in a lot of the funding for unemployment through the CARES Act, the lion's share of it. So in terms of immediate hit to the state finances, it's hard to know for sure. But to say that this is not going to have a wide-ranging and long-lasting impact on the economy, I think would be a bit of an understatement. The spokeswoman that I spoke to from IDES said that this is unprecedented. If you tuned into the program last week, we had Ken Kriz from the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, who had said, you know, largely how this is going to shape up and whether or not Illinois recovers well from this is going to largely depend on the sort of recovery we have. Is it going to be something short and then we're going to shoot right back up, or is it going to be something a little bit more long and protracted? And based on the data that we continue to receive, it seems to be more in the latter category.
And Charlie, that's where that number you were talking about earlier about revenue growth being so slow for the remainder of the calendar year of 2020 and well into the early part of 2021, that's kind of where that's coming from, that the reopening of government will be, a reopening of the economy, I should say, will be slow.
Yeah, you look at the agreement that Governor Pritzker reached with the governors of Indiana, Kentucky, Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, and Wisconsin, and a couple of those people are Republicans. They agreed that they would reopen the economy, their economies, in a way that prioritizes workers' health. It would be fact-based, data-driven, and the idea is to protect families from the spread. So they ticked off some things that they would want to see, that their health care capacity was sufficient. In other words, enough intensive care unit beds, enough ventilators, and so on to handle a resurgence, which is a real possibility if you open too soon, a greater ability to test and trace people who are infected, because that's one of the problems. You could be infected, you could be spreading the disease without even knowing it, without even feeling it, and you could be infecting many, many people if we open things up and say, oh, you can go about your business like normal, go to the restaurant, you know, go to the lakefront, just do normal things, and you could be spreading it. So we have to be able to test people, and we have to be able to trace their contracts. If I turn positive, well, who did you talk to? Where did you go? What did you do? Those kinds of things. And there has to be the best practices for social distancing in workplaces. In some kind of industries, you can imagine a farmer out planting in his field, social distancing is not a big problem. But for some manufacturing operations where people work virtually side by side, or in meat processing, for example, that's another place where it'd be very hard to do social distancing.
Dave, let me go to you, because I think that this has got to be a tough decision for the governor. You had a chance to have a conversation with him one-on-one earlier this week. The governor has got to make a decision on whether to keep a stay-at-home order in place, whether to start to allow certain segments of the economy to reopen, knowing that, you know, we may see more cases if that does happen. That's got to be something weighing on his mind.
Well, yeah, I think it clearly is. I mean, he's not really shown his hand yet, but I think all indications point to an extension of the stay-at-home order beyond its April 30th expiration. You know, I wanted to pick up something just very quickly here on what Charlie was saying in this with these other states. I mean, you know, Illinois, the border states of Iowa and Missouri declined to participate in this, and you know, all of the sort of goals that were laid out in this multi-state compact about reopening are so benign. They're basically what you know, any rational person or any rational business person would think ought to be the way to go, and public health people would think ought to be the way to go. But yet governors in Iowa, where there is not a stay-at-home order in place, and in Missouri, where they only put one in place within the last week and a half or so, chose not to participate. And you just have to kind of wonder, you know, the folks in Illinois from the metro east area to Quincy to the Quad Cities to Galena, it's like they're all sort of in this, line here where they're dealing, you know, just on the other side of the river are these states that have far different standards in place for protecting people. And, you know, I think that's a genuine issue. But as far as Pritzker making the decision here, he's been very, very resistant to pointing too far off into the future. It seems like this is more of a, you know, week-to-week thing. And within those states, I mean, already, you know, we have seen in Wisconsin, the governor there, Tony Evers, has moved their stay-at-home order, you know, deep into May, late May. And in Ohio, Governor DeWine said that, that come May 1st, that they're going to start the very beginning of doing some sort of reopening there of certain businesses. So, you know, I think Pritzker has a lot to weigh here in how we're going to proceed. But he made clear, he's made clear consistently that, that, you know, he's going to do what he thinks best serves Illinois in moving forward.
Well, and I think the fact that on Thursday they announced the number of deaths reported was 125, which I believe was the largest single-day mortality rate since we've entered this phase, for bringing us to a grand total of 1,072. And the fact that the death jumped so high on a single day indicates to me that the governor is virtually certain to extend the stay-at-home order, because the hope had been that if we could keep the increase in the number of deaths down, increase the number of cases down, all the while that we expanded our testing, that would be an indication that we've started to start on the downward trajectory of the curve. And I think the jump in cases, the number of mortality, the number of deaths that were reported on Thursday would kind of suggest that, no, we're not there yet. And I think Mayor Lightfoot said that we're a long way to go before we get there.
Sam, let me go to you, because you covered the governor on Thursday when those numbers were announced. Did you get the same feeling that the governor is leaning toward continuing the stay-at-home order?
Yeah, I would make this prediction 3-for-3. As Charlie and David mentioned, it's pretty much all but certain that the governor will likely extend the stay-at-home order, and it makes sense. I think the question has been asked a lot over the last couple of days, I mean, even weeks. Are we hitting the peak? Are we flattening the curve? And on some days, we've heard data that suggests that maybe we are starting to flatten that curve in terms of the number of new cases. But then you get days like yesterday, as we were taping the show on Thursday, you get a pretty large surge in the number of people who have died from this. And in fact, just looking at my notes here, last week on this program at this time, 528 people had died from COVID-19, and now we're at 1,072. That's more than doubled. I don't think that we're there. I think any reasonable person would come to that conclusion. And as David mentioned, with the multi-state compact that Illinois has entered into, I think Governor Pritzker will make the decision that is appropriate for Illinois, as he said that he's going to do. But he's also going to be taking his cues from other Midwestern states in terms of what they're going to be doing in extending their stay-at-home order. I would almost count on there to be some sort of extension in the near future.
Dave, I mentioned a few moments ago that you had a chance to speak one-on-one with the governor, and it was interesting, some of the things he had to say, but especially when it came down to how this pandemic and trying to lead the state through this, how this is impacting him on an emotional level and personally. Can you talk about that as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a strange dynamic here, because we've had, it's right around 40 straight days that Pritzker has come before cameras every day at 2:30 in the afternoon, giving these sort of grim death toll figures and talking about what the state's doing to address COVID-19. And so, his accessibility is, he's all over the place. We're seeing him constantly. And what I really kind of set out to do in talking to him was just to sort of bore down a little bit kind of into how some of this decision-making is happening and where it's happening and who he's listening to and how he gets his mind off of all this stuff. And, I didn't want to make a story about him just specifically, but I can't really think in my lifetime of, and Charlie, you would know better than all of us, but in terms of the dynamics of this crisis, I can't really think of another governor in my lifetime in Illinois that has had this hand dealt to him. It hasn't happened. I mean, you have to go back a century, I suppose, to the last big pandemic. And so what that interview yielded was just sort of a look at how on certain occasions he is reaching out to some of the families of healthcare providers and first responders who died. And he talks about that being the most anguish-filled moment of his job, really, where it's something he doesn't relish. He actually it's very difficult, as you can imagine, to deal with that. And, it talks about, the difficulty in getting your mind off of this. I mean, how every day the you know, the big part of the day really is a meeting that happens, you know, shortly before their briefing, where they go over the numbers. And, you know, it's like these are data points to us, and they get presented to us that way. But they're human beings. And I think, you know, he talked about how before this big jump that we just talked about with that 125 fatalities on Thursday, he talked about how, you know, they had a period of time in early April where it seemed like for 3 or 4 or 5 days in a row, like they were having, you know, some success in keeping things stable in terms of hospitalizations and such. And then they get socked with a day where it just, you know, went up, you know, into the mid-70s. And he's just like, that took my breath away. You know, the interview also talked a little bit, it went into greater detail, I think he did, about the interactions with the White House, which we followed that. There just seems to be like just the White House's reaction has been volatile and unpredictable in dealing with all of this. And, you know, Pritzker talked about his frustrations in dealing with the president himself over this issue of getting more testing capacity and help from the federal government for Illinois. And then he talked about a back and forth he had with a White House aide about getting, a shipment of these, you know, highly prized N95 masks, which are sort of the gold standard for healthcare providers and first responders. And, you know, he was promised to get help from Trump himself to get these things to Illinois. And after that conversation, this advisor to the president calls Pritzker up and says, hey, we're going to get these to you in Trump time. And that's kind of the first I had heard that phrase be mentioned, Trump time. And Pritzker's initial thinking was, oh man, we've got somebody's attention here. We're going to get these things in a hurry. And then, you know, 4 or 5 days pass, and then they finally get the shipment, and it's not at all what they promised. I mean, they did get some ventilators as promised, but the masks were completely different and of a lesser quality. And he called back and said, well, why did we get the wrong shipment? And he never got a response. And so I asked him, you know, what does Trump time mean to you? And he's like, well, that means, you know, not what you promised or not getting something at all. And, you know, so it was just really kind of a behind the curtain look at how these days are for him. 12 to 16 hour days, working 40 straight days. He and his staff bunkered up in the Thompson Center. And it's something where nobody planned for this, but they've got a unit that's just 24/7 there pretty much.
Before time gets away from us on the show, I do want to go back to you, Dave, on another topic that did come up this week. You and Tony Arnold have been reporting on this for months, but this week you reported on a settlement between families who had loved ones who died of Legionnaires' disease at the Quincy Veterans Home. They had sued the state. Fill us in on what that settlement's all about.
Well, I mean, these are folks who, in all but one case, out of the dozen lawsuits against the state, who died in a 2015 outbreak at the Illinois Veterans Home in Quincy. And there was another fatality that was involved in these lawsuits from 2017. And these guys had filed their lawsuits, and their families had, and they just sort of languished. And then, you know, in late 2017 and then for pretty much the duration of 2018, Tony and I were involved in a big open records battle with the Rauner administration that, you know, showed kind of it really peeled back the layers of the state's mishandling of that crisis in a lot of ways by not telling families about what had gone wrong and about, doing things with the water system there that exposed some of the residents to the hazard of this bacteria. And so these lawsuits had been kind of sitting there, and they became an issue in the campaign in 2018 that led to Pritzker's victory, and then they wound up in the lap of Attorney General Kwame Raoul. And the state had during the midst of all of this in 2018, the state legislature enacted because they overrode an amendatory veto of Rauner. They lifted the Court of Claims caps from $100,000 to $2 million. And what that means is this Court of Claims is kind of a quasi-judicial venue that these folks all had to file their lawsuits in. They didn't go into the circuit court, as is usually the case, but they had to go there because that's where disputes for the state are settled. And many of these families had thought that they might be in line for $2 million apiece as a result of everything that came out of it. But the settlements wound up being far less than that, and they range from about $75,000 to $775,000 per family. And I think the sum total for the state as a result of all of this is about $6.4 million. So, you know, it's you know, a lot of the families we talked to in the course of this didn't want to react here. I think they're concerned about, you know, speaking out now might jeopardize all of this. But we did talk to one family member who told us that she just feels a level of closure and relief to have this finally passed. And there was an acknowledgement, at least from the state, that there were some mistakes made. I mean, it wasn't an outright admission of liability, but the attorney general offered his condolences and then offered to put a plaque up in the home that's being built there now to replace the old one, naming all of these veterans. And so these families, I think, do have, you know, some sense of relief that this has come to a close. So that's, you know, for them, that's a good thing.
And just a few seconds left here, Dave, but the money is on hold at this moment, right? They don't have that money yet.
No, because that has to be built into the fiscal 21 budget that we talked about at the top of the show here, the one that's going to be lacking a lot of money. I mean, it's a usually kind of pro forma kind of thing that once these awards of the Court of Claims get settled upon, they get built into a budget and then the checks get cut. But they're waiting very much for the legislature to come into session and the governor to ink a new budget for next year, and then they should get paid.
Okay. Let's go to our notes from the field. Charlie, let's go to you.
Well, Illinois was number one in the nation in a kind of an unenviable position, according to a report that came out a little bit ago. For the second consecutive year, we had the highest number of criminal exonerations of any state. Those are people who were wrongfully convicted, sent to prison when they were innocent. 30 men were exonerated here in 2019. Twice as many as in any other state, according to the National Registry of Exonerations, which keeps tabs on this stuff. Pennsylvania and Texas were tied for second with 15 each. Now, one of the reasons, according to this report, that Illinois far outpaced the rest of the nation in wrongful convictions and thus exonerations was because of certain corrupt police officers in the city of Chicago who would shake down people in low-income neighborhoods for kickbacks, and if people refused to pay them the kickbacks or protection money, they'd plant drugs on them and charge them with drug offenses, and people would be sent to prison.
Sam?
Well, Sean, Governor J.B. Pritzker has walked with penguins in a new public service announcement. He appeared alongside Wellington the penguin from Shedd Aquarium and some other marine animals, reminding Illinoisans about some of the COVID-19 basics, which is to stay 6 feet apart, to wash your hands for 20 seconds, and things like that.
I have to go watch that. And then Dave?
Well, so let's stay on the animal theme here. You know, it wasn't a Shedd Aquarium, but when I did that interview with Pritzker, we were talking a little bit about how at the very, very end of the day when he's at home, he gets his mind off of the whole pandemic by flipping on the Netflix series Tiger King and focusing in on Joe Exotic. And so he's like the rest of us. I think we're all binge-watching these programs to just sort of stay sane. Although that series, my wife and I just watched it, and it's unbelievable.
Okay. That is our time for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Sam Dunklaw, and Dave McKinney of WBEZ. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.